Ever been in that law school study session where you're just going in circles? Everyone's got a different idea, can't agree on the next case.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or maybe you've mentally run through a negotiation that just hits a wall, a total stalemate. Frustrating, right? Well, multiply that frustration by like 1,000, and you've kind of got a glimpse into corporate deadlock, where disagreements can literally just grind a whole business to a halt.
Yeah, it's high-stakes stuff.
Absolutely. So today, we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating case that highlights this perfectly. Strong v. From Laboratories, Inc.
Right. This is a 1956 Wisconsin Supreme Court decision, and it's about a company that was actually doing well, profitable even, but facing forced liquidation.
Forced liquidation.
Yeah,
Wow.
all because of a shareholder deadlock. Went on for 7 years.
7 years.
7 years. What makes it really insightful, especially for law students, is how the court dealt with the statutes, you know, how they applied the law, even when the result seemed, well, maybe not the best business move.
Exactly. So for this deep dive, we've got quite a bit of material. We've got our internal guidance, the case brief itself, a standard legal brief breaking it down, and even a perplexity analysis just to make sure we hit the key points.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So the goal today is really to understand the legal gears turning when ownership hits an impasse and see how strictly courts stick to the letter of the law, even if it leads somewhere, you know, surprising. Okay, let's set the scene.
All right. So the whole thing starts after Dr. Green passes away in 1947. His death leaves From Laboratories split right down the middle, 50-50 ownership.
Okay.
On one side, you've got the From family interests. On the other, Dr. Green's estate, and Harlan Strong is the trustee representing them.
Got it. 50-50.
Exactly. And that equal split means any big decision, especially electing the board of directors, needs everyone to agree, both sides.
Uh-oh. I can see where this is going.
Precisely. That's where the trouble starts. Big trouble.
7 years of trouble, you said. That's a long time to be stuck.
It really is. Imagine year after year, annual meetings, and they just cannot agree on who should be on the board. Deadlock. Every single time.
And the weird part is the company wasn't failing, right? It was profitable.
That's right. By all accounts, From Labs was doing well, successful business. It was just completely paralyzed from a governance standpoint.
Wow.
And there's another layer here. The company's own bylaws said that the current directors stay in office until their successors are elected.
So they were just frozen. The old board just stayed on indefinitely.
Essentially, yeah. No new directors could get in because of the deadlock, so the existing board was just stuck there, really entrenched the whole situation.
That bylaw seems like it just made things worse, didn't it?
You could definitely argue that. It wasn't just a minor point. It actively kept the deadlock going. Which brings us to a really key moment. The shareholder meeting on October 12th, 1954.
Okay, the 54 meeting. What happened there? Another failed attempt?
Well, yes and no. It was another attempt, but what happened there became critical evidence later on.
All right, lay it on me. This is where it gets interesting, huh?
Yeah. So when it came time to vote for directors, Harlan Strong, remember, representing the Green Estate's 50%, he didn't just like abstain or vote for someone else. He specifically cast against votes for the From family's candidates.
Okay, against votes. Is that unusual?
Well, the trial court certainly thought so. Initially, the lower court actually threw out those against votes, invalidated them.
Why? What was their reasoning?
Their logic was basically that shareholders can only really vote for someone, not actively against them, in a way that counts towards the total needed for a majority.
Huh. So they ignored Strong's votes.
Effectively, yes. In their calculation, by ignoring the against votes, they decided the From candidates had received a majority of the valid votes cast. So boom, deadlock broken, or so they
It's
thought.
always a but.
But the Wisconsin Supreme Court saw it differently. They reversed the trial court. They said, no, those against votes are valid. They count.
Okay, that's a big deal then. Why did the Supreme Court say they were valid?
Well, think about it. In a 50-50 split, if you can only vote for someone, the side proposing candidates always wins if the other side just abstains or votes for losing candidates, right? The Supreme Court basically said that a 50% owner needs a way to actively block the other 50%. An against vote is that mechanism.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. It preserves the balance of power in that specific 50-50 setup.
Exactly. Justice Curry wrote, and this is a key quote, "A 50% shareholder must have a lead." And two, because of that deadlock, they've failed to elect directors for at least two consecutive annual meetings.
Check again. 7 years' worth.
Exactly. Now, here's the kicker, the really crucial part. The statute as the Supreme Court interpreted it, doesn't say the court has to consider if liquidation is actually good for the shareholders or the business.
Wait, really? So even if the company is making money hand over fist, if those two conditions, deadlock and failure to elect directors, are met, the court can just dissolve it?
That's what the Supreme Court found, yes. It seems pretty drastic, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like common sense would say, mm-hmm. hey, this company's working, let's find another way.
It does feel that way. But the court's view, grounded in this statute, was that the law provides this specific remedy for this specific kind of paralysis. Whether it's financially wise or not isn't the court's primary concern under the statute. Their job is to apply the law as written.
So the trial court was worried about killing a profitable business.
Right. The trial court, remember, thought the deadlock was broken at the 54 meeting partly because they invalidated those against votes. And they were clearly uncomfortable with liquidating a successful company. They seemed to be looking for a more equitable solution, something that made business sense.
But the Supreme Court basically said, look, the statute is clear. The conditions are met.
Pretty much. They said because Strong's against votes were valid, no majority was reached in 54. The deadlock condition was met. The failure to elect directors condition was met. Therefore, the statute applies.
And that quote about benefit or detriment.
Yes, they stated it very plainly. Whether liquidation is beneficial or detrimental is immaterial. Once those statutory triggers are pulled, the potential for liquidation exists under the law, regardless of the financial consequences.
Oh, that's a really stark interpretation. No room for, like, judicial wiggle room based on the business reality.
Apparently not, according to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in this specific context. The focus was entirely on whether the statutory conditions for invoking the liquidation provision had been satisfied.
Okay, so the Supreme Court establishes the deadlock is real and the statute applies. What happened then? Did they just order the liquidation on the spot?
Not quite immediately. They remanded the case, sent it back down to the trial court.
With instructions?
Yes, with instructions to appoint a receiver. This receiver's job would be to oversee the liquidation process. However.
Another however.
Good.
Yeah. There was an important condition attached. The Supreme Court said the liquidation should only proceed unless the shareholders, the Frum faction, and Strong could actually agree on a plan for one side to buy out the other.
So they basically forced their hand, like agree on a buyout or the company gets liquidated.
Exactly. It put immense pressure on them to finally resolve the underlying conflict themselves, offering one last off-ramp before the liquidation process truly began. It acknowledged the legal reality, but still provided a chance for a less destructive outcome if the parties could finally cooperate. That seems harsh, but maybe necessary after 7 years of stalemate. Okay, so thinking about this whole thing, what are the big takeaways for, say, a law student listening to this? What should they remember from Strong v. Frum?
Okay, several key things. First, and maybe most obviously, it screams about the importance of really well-drafted corporate bylaws and shareholder agreements, especially in closely held companies where these 50-50 splits can happen.
Right, like plan for deadlock before it happens.
Absolutely. You need mechanisms in the documents to resolve these things. Think buy-sell agreements with clear valuation methods, maybe mandatory mediation or arbitration clauses, something. Anything other than just letting it fester until a court has to step in under a potentially drastic statute.
Yeah, an ounce of prevention, right. What else?
Second, it's a powerful lesson that courts often stick very strictly to the language of statutes, especially in corporate governance. Even if it seems inequitable or bad for business, if the statute says if A and B happen, then C is possible, the court might just say, okay, A and B happened, C is now on the table.
So don't assume a judge will just find a fair solution if the law dictates otherwise. Know the statutes inside and out.
Precisely. Understand the triggers. Understand the consequences laid out in the law. Judicial discretion might be more limited than you think in these specific statutory situations.
Okay.
And third, it just generally illustrates how courts grapple with interpreting these corporate laws. It shows the tension between applying the law strictly and considering the practical economic realities. In this case, the strict application won out.
Got it. So to boil it all down, the main lesson is?
The main lesson is that corporate deadlock, if it meets specific statutory criteria like those in the Wisconsin law, can lead to forced liquidation. And crucially, this can happen even if the company is profitable. The court might prioritize enforcing the statute over assessing the business wisdom of the outcome.
That's definitely sobering. Puts a lot of weight on getting those initial agreements right.
Right.
So thinking ahead for all the future corporate lawyers listening, here's something to chew on. Given Strong v. Frum, How could you structure corporate agreements differently? What kind of innovative clauses or mechanisms could you build in from day one to prevent this kind of nuclear option for a healthy business?
That's a great question. It pushes beyond just standard buy-sell clauses, maybe tiered dispute resolution, mandatory cooling off periods, provisions for neutral tiebreakers under specific circumstances. You really have to get creative.
Yeah.
And maybe think about the bigger picture too, you know? Does a legal system that allows for the liquidation of a profitable, albeit deadlocked, company actually serve the economy well? Or does it prioritize legal formality over economic reality? It's a debate worth having.
Definitely complex ethical and economic questions wrapped up in there.
Yeah.
Well, this deep dive into Strong v. Frum Laboratories has certainly given us a lot to think about regarding corporate deadlock and statutory interpretation.
For sure. A classic case for a reason.
Hopefully this gives our listeners some valuable insights for their future careers. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.